Hi, I'm Jason. I'm one of the guys from That Films You. We've got a brand new show here for you, Review and Rewind. By we, I'm referring to the gentleman sitting next to me, Rob.
Hi, and we are, of course, joined by our amazing guest producer, Linda, keeping us on track and in check. Thank you, Linda. We'll give her a wave. Hi.
Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Yeah, she gave us a finger. That's good. Some of our listeners may be familiar with the That Films You podcast, which encompasses a few core range of shows, That Movie Show and That Movie Review, as well as some others.
Yeah, that's right. Under That Films You banner, they also host another podcast even, called Sounds Like Comics. We're excited to be here today to launch our very first and hopefully not the last episode of another edition to That Films You family, as Jason mentioned. Rewind and Review.
Yeah, so on this show, at this point, it's just Rob and myself. But what we'll be doing is rewinding and bringing you some reviews of movies and TV shows from the past.
It's genius.
Genius, yes. No one's ever done it before.
No one has. No one ever will again, because they don't need to, because we're
covering it.
Whether there's a remake or a sequel coming out, or a notable anniversary of a film's release, we'll look for any excuse to bring you a rewind and a review. It might just be a movie or a TV series that we really love. Much like life, we will find a way.
Whoa. There it is. With the rewind and review, by taking a look at a property that has been around for a while, we can actually do more than just review it. We can take a look at the legacy, how it has held up over time. Mm-hmm. You know what? Even give our personal experiences, whether we watched it as a kid or sometimes later in our lives, or if we just watched it last week for the first time.
That's right. So let's rewind for the very first time to the year 1991.
We have to go back!
Go back, Stan!
What year is it?
Are you telling me you built a time machine?
Yes, 1991, the year that we got possibly one of the best sequels ever made, Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And thanks to Anarchy PR, I was actually able to attend the Perth premiere of the 3D re-release, which will be officially released in cinemas for just 1 week only on August 24th.
I actually wasn't fortunate enough to join Jason on that one.
But I asked him if he wanted to come with me.
I did, however, actually watch the extended version on Blu-ray as my little taster for this one. So we're both going to have a little bit of a different take on this one.
Yeah.
So here we go. Terminator 2 Judgment Day is, of course, the sequel to the 1984 film The Terminator. Much like the first film, this one is also directed by the legendary, to me, James Cameron.
I'm sure to many.
There's a lot
of Titanic fans and Avatar fans out there. Avatar. I like Titanic. I'll leave it at that. So in Terminator 2, a shape-shifting Terminator, the T-1000, played by Robert Patrick, is sent from the future to 1995 to kill a 10-year-old John Connor, played by the young Edward Furlong, the key to civilization's victory over the future robot uprising.
Yeah.
Another Terminator, a reprogrammed T-800, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, has been sent back to protect John Connor. The T-800, John, and his mother Sarah Connor, played by Linda Hamilton, they go on the run with the threat of Skynet and a nuclear holocaust called Judgment Day on the horizon.
Ooh. So firstly, I guess what we're going to try to do is we're going to attack these ones by talking about our own personal experiences with the film. Kind of things along the lines of, you know, where were you when you first saw this film?
Tell me, where were you were at least born. Well, I was born. I was in infancy. I was in my second year of life when this movie came out.
Well,
so I can't say I went to the cinema to see it.
Well, I remember I was around about 6 or 7 years old, which, looking at this timeline, probably would have been about year one or two when it came out. I obviously saw it at home.
Okay.
So I actually saw it before the original. I don't think I saw the original until I was an adult, probably. But I do remember being quite young. I had it on VHS and it got played like hard at my house.
Did you find that the second one was either Well, I'm thinking more like on TV. It was played more.
Yeah.
Than the first one.
I think so.
I think I remember watching the second one. I think that was my first exposure to the Terminator franchise. I guess
it was on TV.
I couldn't tell you what age I was. No idea. But obviously, it would have been
a whipper.
Would have been years later after, you know, obviously it was airing on TV and all that.
Yeah.
But yeah, they would...
I honestly think...
I felt like they would just play it more. And only years later, I watched Terminator for the first time and I was like, whoa, like, this is a cool franchise. I'm such a happy, like, 10-year-old or whatever I am.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly think that this is probably one of the most, like, heavily played by regional Channel 7 down in Busselton where I'm from. I remember it. Oh, it must have been at least once a year they played this one. It was like a Christmas special, even at Christmas.
It was the same in the old Metropolitan here in Perth. Like, it was either 10 or 7 or 9, whatever channel it was.
Yeah,
just played a lot. But I think people obviously loved it.
Yeah. I mean, it was... We're going to talk about this later, but it was so groundbreaking. So it really, really sparked the imagination. You can understand why it would have got such a high repeat turnaround. Well, I mean,
it literally, like... brought with it such a long-lasting legacy. We're talking about it.
Mm.
What is it, 25-ish years now?
But anyway, you're right. The legacy, it is substantial. And like I said, to me it's genre-defining with its extensive use of CGI for pretty much the first time in cinema. There were a few things before it, but we're talking... You know, I think it's something ridiculous.
It's
like six. No, it's like one of over 100 CGI shots or something.
What's
stupid?
What's weird with it is that a lot of time and effort was put into developing this new technology, like especially to do with the CGI.
Yeah.
James Cameron's always one of those directors who like gets on board and he's like, I want to push boundaries and come up with new stuff. You know, did it with Avatar and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
What's funny is that there's only, if you add it all together, about 5 minutes of CGI footage in this movie.
Oh,
in total,
really?
Yeah, if you encompass it all together.
Right.
But obviously, it's blended amongst all these other amazing, incredible, both practical, both...
That's what I'm thinking.
I was like, there's no alternative to practical.
No, it's practical or it's CGI. But you're right, there's... And it's similar to a few of the other movies that ILM and that would have worked on. Say, Jurassic Park, for example. Great movie.
ILM, of course, is Industrial Light and Magic.
Correct, yeah.
Along with Sam Winston.
Studios.
Yeah, all those puppets and animatronics and all that.
So, but yeah, it's a seamless blend of practical effects and CGI, and it's one of the first times it's seen in cinema, right? So, and now I'm thinking back, just got to retract my earlier statement, the amount of the shots that were used, I think we're talking practical and CGI effects for that stat that I was talking.
Well, this movie actually gave us the first use of a natural human motion of a CG character. So prior to that, CG was used... or either like a monster or some sort of cartoon or animated thing.
Mm.
Something non-human. So I guess like those details are harder.
Yeah.
And on that, of course, the first partially CG main character as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do know that there was a movie before this one. I think it was called The Abyss.
Yes.
Have you seen The Abyss?
That's a James Cameron as well, isn't it not?
I do not know. Oh, I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
That's another one where they sort of push boundaries. Yeah.
Well, they did. They had a spherical, it wasn't really, but it was a fluid monster in that movie. I guess that's a way of putting it.
That sea worm thing.
That's right. And that was one of the pioneering attempts at liquid water with CGI as well. And that was 1990.
That was basically, I guess you could say that was the blueprint of the T-1000 in this film, you know, like the liquid form.
That's right. Yeah, 1989. By the way, we are aware, listeners out there, that we are aware that everybody probably has seen this one. But if you haven't, you'll have to wait to our review at the end of this.
What? To see if it's any good?
Yeah, totally.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course, comes back as the Terminator or the T-800. Only this time, you know, he does a big switch on his
original character.
Yeah, so he goes from villain to... hero sort of thing. What's cool is that this is not only the highest grossing film of 1991, but of Schwarzenegger's career. So, yeah, he was a breakthrough.
Wow, really?
It's like a breakthrough role for him in as the Terminator. And this one was
incredible.
Oh, this movie made so much money. Which is good because it was actually the most expensive film made up to that point. Which only $102 million, but I guess back in 1991, that was
it's a couple of pennies.
It's expensive. But what we do get, obviously, like I said, is... the switch, the antagonist to protagonist switch, which, I mean, I'm sure if we looked into it, we might find an example of that happening before, but this might be one of the first potentially examples of this actually happening, where you have a first movie where you've got your villain, and then the second one, they've switched.
Yeah. Look, I can't think of an example from that time, but I would... I don't, and you know what? I wasn't around really to pay attention to the marketing for this particular movie. But I don't know if they actually market it with him obviously being the Switch.
I tell you, I've looked at original trailers and all that for it. They ruin it.
Oh.
The trailer. Some of the early trailers actually start with he was first. The villain, I paraphrase, but it's something along the lines of
first the villain,
and now he's back.
And now he's the hero.
Yeah, as the hero, and it's like, okay,
boo,
cool.
Boo.
Well, even back then.
Well, anyway,
don't watch trailers.
Anyway,
if you could go back in time, don't watch the trailer.
Listeners, you probably already know this, but Jason religiously only watches one trailer,
like a broken
from a marketing
record.
Campaign.
I'll tell you not to.
And you know what? This would have been one of those cases, I guess. But the reason I was raising that is because as I was watching this particular version of the movie, it to me felt like they were deliberately trying to mask whether or not he was good or bad until he saw.
If you go into this movie not knowing, say you watch the first one, you've seen Arnie, you've seen he's the bad guy, he wants to kill everyone.
Yeah,
you start watching this movie, you've got there's two Terminators. One of them's dressed like a cop looking for John Connor.
That's right.
The other is the Arnie who you know is the killing machine. Yeah. Also, I guess, looking for John Connor.
Mm.
It does play as if you don't know what's going on. Well, you assume the cop's the good one or the other one's the good one.
Yep.
So you do get the two Terminators, potentially two killing machines.
Yeah.
You're not really sure what's going on. And it's not until you get to the scene where, the T-800 confronts Linda Hamilton or Sarah Connor in the hospital.
Yeah.
And that moment you think, she's gone. He's there. Yeah. She's trapped.
Well, to a point, I mean, he's already got...
I guess
Edward
he has
Floyd
already.
At that point, right? So he's already proved himself.
Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, in the mall, he pulls out a shotgun.
That's
right. Oh, so it's probably more that scene,
it's the same with the roses. That's where it's like... That's where it feels like you're coming to a point. And then it flips on its head. And it's a very refreshing little feeling that even now, even, 20 years later.
It's something that really worked. It landed well, and I think...
Yeah. I think they did... This is a testament to Cameron and the writing team in this film. It's a really good way of doing a sequel. And it is something you don't see often now, is really putting a different spin on the characters.
But it's what makes it weird when you go and watch, say, Genesis or Terminator Salvation, and you see the T-800...
Mm.
And in your mind, I think, at least for me anyway, I was more in tune with Terminator 2.
Yeah.
That when I see Arnie, I'm like, all good, no drama. But then suddenly they're all afraid of it and he's killing, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, totally. But I think the character shift is pretty amazing. It's kind of, you see a completely different character in Linda Hamilton as well. So, just if you want to expand the changes in this particular film from the first, Linda Hamilton's character in the first is so soft and, she's a...
Yeah, now she's like a warrior. She's trained with guns.
Yeah,
and...
it's a huge contrast of character. And I think it's refreshing. It's great.
Mm. Well, when we meet up with her, she's, I want to say incarcerated. She basically is locked up.
Yeah, that's right.
In a crazy asylum sort of thing.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, completely different character to, she's both broken, but also so much, she just seems so much stronger and she's come out of the wash and she's just ready to fight.
I'll tell you what though, one scene I noticed being different in the version I watched was the extended scene with Kyle Reese, and you actually see Linda Hamilton's character soften in that particular scene, whereas the rest of the film,
that's
she's
where
hard.
She has a dream. Now, this isn't in the... I guess the theatrical version.
Version
In the 3D one was the theatrical one.
Yeah.
But yeah, that dream sequence is not in that one.
It's not in the story, so you've got to watch the extended. But either way, you see the original character come out in that particular scene.
Yeah.
For the rest of the film, I think completely different character in the best possible way.
So I guess when she's sleeping and having a dream, she reverts
back
to old.
Yeah, still vulnerable, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So
With Sarah Connor in the asylum, we get Dr. Peter Silberman coming back.
Yeah.
Now, I reminded you about this character from the first one, and you were like, I don't recall.
Don't recall him. I've actually got an additional bit of trivia on that. He's also in the third.
He is. He rocks up.
See, I didn't know that either.
But
it's
not as exciting. He's sort of like that guy who's in the Terminator movies, but it's like, but who? He does have a small? He has a small. He's making small. No, he has a small role in the first Terminator film, just at the police station.
Jason had to show me a video of this. I didn't believe him.
Criminal psychologist.
Yeah.
But there's not really much to it. He's just sort of assessing Sarah Connor. And Kyle Reese. They're both crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, not assessing Sarah Connor. Just Kyle Reese. And then he leaves the police station before Arnie rocks up and starts shooting him.
He literally sees nothing. But if he was only there for a little bit longer,
everything would have been...
Yeah.
Maybe this movie would be different.
So what do you got to say about John Connor? What do you got to say about Edward Furlong?
Okay. Now, we only saw an older version of him in the first one, very briefly, not even a talking role, I don't think. It was just sort of some rough guy. And we see him again sort of at the start of this movie. But the young version, the 10-year-old one that we get here, you know, I'm torn because this is where the movie starts to get a little bit dated for me.
Yeah.
The sort of persona, the acting seems fine, but I guess it's like the persona and the dialogue that, you know, the kid sort of gives.
Yeah.
It does become very dated. You know, he's saying, he tells Arnie not to say, you know, like, no problemo, and hasta la, you know, though hasta la vista is such an iconic thing, it's just like, why is he saying things like that?
Yeah.
Very 90s.
I guess kids in 90s really...
What a mouth, mate. What a mouth.
What a mouth.
Like, he's not a likable kid.
He's a 10-year-old that can bloody, rig ATM machines. So he's
Well, his mum taught him that.
Oh, his mum did, of course. Survival skills.
In the early scenes of the film, he is a more unlikable character. And it's not until he's reunited with his mum and, you know, the T-800 is sort of... They have a bond together.
Yeah, like a little family thing going on.
Almost like a father figure. Yeah. And like the Sarah Connor character refers to it as that. Like, he'll always protect him. And you do see him become like... It's as if John Connor is like reverting back to being just a normal kid again. You know, he's playing with his big robot friend.
Yeah.
Like...
It is, yeah. It definitely does.
But he's definitely a dick to his foster parents.
he's a dick to everybody. Yeah,
to everyone.
To everybody. His mummy's a dick.
Those two guys who try and help him when, you know, the Terminator's sort of like hassling him.
And then
he just tells them to... Well, he uses a bit of bad language, which I'll avoid. But he says some words to him.
Yeah. Do you think Edward Furlong's has remained in character now, like for his entire adulthood?
I don't want to get too personal about it.
Let's not
pick on the guy. Like, he did a good job as a kid. Like,
he was a pretty It was a very convincing performance. I enjoyed it. Oh, however, we'll say on a recent viewing, so it had been a good probably decade since I'd seen this movie. You could see that he was more of a child actor for sure. In these later viewings, you know, you could see that he definitely wasn't up, you know, on the same caliber as some of his adult counterparts within the film.
Yeah.
But it's still a pretty strong performance for him.
I think overall it does work. Like, it fits in, and I think it's more just probably watching it now and looking back, and you can probably see the difference more.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Like you said, but...
Absolutely.
I think it definitely worked, and especially like for the time.
Yeah, that's right. What did you think about the T-1000, Robert Patrick?
Yeah, so the villain. I mean, I'm lost for words.
Not human.
The T-1000 is the star of this show. Sorry, Artie. T-1000. I mean, all the stuff with the effects, all the stuff that they brought in.
Yeah.
You know, it was for this character and for what he brought. So, I mean, is it even any point us saying, you know, do we like him or not? I mean, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
You're a fan.
I'm definitely a fan.
Like the fear that he brings, the coldness from him. Heard James Cameron actually, well, not me, I haven't actually heard him, but I've read that James Cameron has actually referred to him as being cat-like. You know, just sort of watching and just on the prowl, ready to pounce.
That's amazing.
Lean, slim. You know, like the opposite
of
what Arnie is, you know, like the big he's referred to Arnie as like the tank, and then the T-1000 is like a Porsche, you know? Like
I remember these great machines,
but...
Yeah, I just thought, you know, on the viewing that I had recently, I just thought he was so cold. And he genuinely, when I saw this movie as a 7-year-old, or thereabouts, it was terrifying. He was a very convincing killer. Very much so.
Unstoppable.
And the fact that he
giving up guy.
that's right. And the fact that he could, and it was used to really good effect by James Cameron. You weren't really aware of his shape shifting abilities to the point that he was until he's actually having the altercation with the step parents.
Yeah.
And that scene, I'm not going to lie, we could talk about it a little bit later, but that's one of my favorite scenes is the milk carton scene. And it was...
That's the knife through the face.
In case anyone was trying to dodge around it. But the character itself, like you, once you saw that knife, you realize that this sleek, skinny dude could be anybody.
Yeah.
And it was terrifying. And when it was Robert Patrick playing the role, it was so cold and inhuman.
I think that's a testament to the actor that, you know, even without all those scenes where, you know, he's in liquid form or he's forming knives and weapons with his arms and, you know, when he's been split in half, when he's just in a human form, he's still projecting such a terrifying, like, cold is, I guess, the perfect way to describe him, just empty and soulless.
His introduction into the actual film, he's sitting there in his little scooped out little hole.
Naked.
And he's just killed his bit of ass. Yeah, and he's just killed his cop and he's sitting there and he's cocking the pistol and just looking around and it is cold.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Very powerful. And then from that point on, obviously, you know, he's the big bad. He's the big one. And then you've also got Miles. He could be considered a bit of a bad guy. But he can also be considered a bit of a poor, good guy.
I mean, I guess...
Really unlucky dude.
I mean, he's introduced as a, you know, he's the one behind it all. Not behind it, but sort of, he's responsible. So, I mean, I'd class him as an antagonist, but he does have his...
I really love, by the way...
He does have a turnaround.
There's a scene where Arnie, or the T-800, is actually rattling off the key dates of all of these things.
Yeah.
And it's talking about when Miles invents this and comes across this.
Yep.
And then talks about the bigger picture. It's a really, really good way of giving an overview of it all. Really, really effective exposition.
Yeah, to sort of, explaining and where explains all the key role. Points.
Yeah, explains how important Miles is to the future.
That is actually one of my favorite scenes. And again, like this one doesn't actually involve any effects.
No.
It's just, it's Miles and his wife sitting around the table with the T-800 and Sarah Connor and and John Connor, I think, is there as well. And they're literally talking about time travel. His wife, Teresa, played by S. Apatha Murkison, you know, she's saying, if we, you know, aren't we changing time now just by having this conversation, just by knowing?
Mm.
And, you know, they're like, we can't leave it to chance, yada, yada. Things will still, someone else will pick up your work. And, you know, it's like they're talking about time and consequences, and it's just like it's just these people talking about time travel.
That's right.
Which so, I'm a sucker for. So,
but I felt incredibly sorry for Miles. He's a beautiful character. You just felt, you know, he's there. He's a loving dad who just works too hard, and you know, we everyone can relate to him in a way. And you don't. He doesn't even himself believe that he's going to become the orchestrator of the apocalypse.
You do feel for him when, again, him and his wife are sitting on the floor and they're terrified. Yeah. They're crying.
And
Arnie's just ripping his skin off his arm.
That's right. Like, and, oh, God, it's so amazing. Even now, it's real. Oh, that's so real.
It's too real.
And even to the very end, you know, spoiler alert, hopefully...
I think spoilers are out. We probably should have voiced that at the start. We'll do that from now on.
That's all right. Sorry.
Spoilers are...
Miles sacrifices himself for the better good. And he even ensures that nobody else dies along with him by holding, even though he's shot and he's wounded, he's holding his thing above a detonator.
Yep.
And you feel for him. You're like, you legend. You bloody legend.
That moment, again, like, amazing acting. You know, he's... Yeah. He's on his last breath.
Yeah,
he's like,
I can't hold this
crying.
Anymore.
He's
get out of here. Now. You're like,
I can't do it, but you know, watch the film. You probably know what I'm talking about.
If it was me, there'd be just dead police everywhere because I couldn't hold that thing.
It would just go. In that moment, he's like, he's accepted that it's like he's responsible for this.
Yeah,
he's gonna do what he can. Yeah. He can to stop it. Like,
his poor family.
Well, in a way, he is saving
the
them.
Dyson family.
He is saving.
Sorry,
them.
Buddies. Sorry, guys. R.I.P. Miles.
We catch up with Danny in Terminator Genesis. If anyone's interested.
Great.
And what's he up to?
We may not even talk about that anymore. So I reckon. So that's a couple. That's the characters. What do you reckon about the score?
Now, Brad Fidel. This
composer. I didn't do my research, so you...
I've got it written down. That's fine. Okay, I did it for you.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Thank you. Continue.
I mean, you heard a snippet of the score at the start of this podcast. I mean, the music is incredible.
Would you say it's iconic?
I think the Terminator theme is
that
iconic.
Tune is, yeah. But like the boom boom,
like the dun 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 dun. I mean, yeah, that's classic Terminator. The more of the Judgment Day theme is like,
Yeah.
I'll play a bit of that at the end of the podcast. Yeah. If you're like,
just
what?
For your,
or just
your
watch the movie.
You're listening
it
pleasure.
It plays over the opening credits. My God.
But it's not too bad. But to me, look, I'm a fan of scores. And I would say that I haven't paid enough attention to this guy.
I'd say the opposite. That's one I would recognize if I heard it. If we were playing a game where we had to guess the score,
I'd recognize it now. I just,
oh, fair enough.
Probably haven't for the last decade.
But you would recognize the dun dun dun, and then
I think that's
you'd take
very
a stab.
Iconic.
You'd probably guess one of the first two movies.
Yeah,
you would.
Yeah. Oh, well,
and that's the theme for Terminator Salvation.
so there you go. So so what do you reckon? Should we take a quick break?
I think it might be a good time to do that.
Stay here. I'll be back.
Oh, we're still here. Okay. What we're going to do during our break time, I'm going to give Rob a little bit of a quiz. So what I've got for him, 10 questions in 60 seconds. Are you ready?
No, disclaimer, I'm not very good at this. I'm going to try my hardest.
Just for you guys playing at home, it will be related, obviously, to Terminator 2. I'm not just going to ask him random questions. We got Linda with the clock ready to go.
Linda, are you ready?
And
there's a thumbs
up. I reckon
up.
She's going to start it after I finish asking the first question.
Linda, are you right?
Yeah. Ready? What year will be Judgment Day?
Oh my good gosh. 97.
At the shopping mall, what does the T-800 use to conceal his shotgun?
Roses.
When the T-800 is impersonating John on the phone, he refers to the dog as Wolfie. What is the dog's real name?
Scotty?
It's not Scotty. As an alternative to affirmative, what does John tell T-800 to say?
Some stupid line. Pass.
Who does Sarah and co turn to for weapons before she goes after Dyson?
Enrique?
That's it.
Yeah.
Who does John introduce the T-800 as to Enrique?
Uncle. Father.
Uncle. I'll take uncle. Uncle Bob. Bob. What words do Sarah Connor carve into the table after she wakes up from another dream?
Oh man, I remember this too. No, it's not there.
What is the name of Miles Dyson's son?
Max?
No, that's the dog's name. Well done. And last question, and we're out of time.
Oh no. What did I get? How many did I have?
You got the majority of what I asked. Correct. Yes. Obviously, you missed Bob. Max obviously was the dog's name.
Yeah, what else?
Instead of affirmative, the T-800 should say, no problemo.
No problemo.
And Enrico was correct. Sarah Connor carves the words no fate into the table.
Deep.
Danny was the name of Miles Dyson's son. The last two questions, towards the end of the film, the T-1000 steals and drives a truck containing what type of chemical?
Liquid nitrogen
was the answer.
Yep,
and this was the question I really hoped I got a chance to ask you. In the final fight between the T-800 and the T-1000, which arm does the T-800 lose?
T-800 loses his left arm.
Damn.
Yep,
correct.
Yep,
well done.
Yep, yep, yep,
so you
yep.
did all right.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I never want to do that again.
And we'll be doing this next time.
Yay.
Hasta la vista. Baby.
Okay, so let's just get straight back into it. Where we left off.
Where were we?
Let's talk some special effects. I mean, I hate to say, but that's a big part of what this movie is. You know,
it's
like
a huge part,
big achievement,
huge.
You know, most of its awards and stuff were pretty much for like
effects,
yeah,
editing.
You got like sound BAFTA editing. Awards, like best sound, yeah. best special effects, Academy Awards, best makeup, best sound editing,
and rightfully best visual so. Effects. And rightfully so.
I mean, there were some best actress, Linda Hamilton, and best direction, James Cameron.
Yeah, okay.
The Saturn Awards.
Worthy.
But no Oscars for, for them.
It's all the special effects guys.
Oh, that's it.
They were lapping up. However, they were in a, you know, they were in a bit of a renaissance moment, you know, for this next decade. It was all special effects heavy movies, yeah. really, that were really topping it all. Anyway.
One of our favourites, Jurassic Park, would only come 2 years later.
So, standout scene and some worthy mentions in regards to our special effects, Jason. What do you have?
I've got a list here, if you were.
I also happen to have a list.
Let's just throw some out there. We're probably doubled up as well, but you know what?
They're worth doubling.
Either, tell me if you didn't like them, though, because if I mention one and you don't like it, then, you know, that creates a bit of conversation. That's right. Good.
Okay, tell me, what do you have?
The first one I've got is actually the apocalyptic opening.
Ooh.
Now, this is not a CGI scene. This is all practical stuff. This is sets. You've got playgrounds. You've got skulls in the ground. You've got really dark, dim lighting. And you've got...
You're talking about the battle scene at the opening.
Oh, yeah, the very opening battle with the... Right. You've got the animatronic... The exoskeleton Terminator robots. There we go. I'm a really bad nerd.
It's the Arnold Schwarzenegger without the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, without the skin.
Yeah.
Again, with the scores playing over it. I mean, and you've got Linda Hamilton
narrating it.
Yeah, really, narrating on about some apocalypse stuff, how bad life is.
It's great exposition. It works really, really well. It's
a fantastic opening.
I will say that I actually had that on my list of not so good effects.
Get out.
That doesn't hold up, man.
Really?
It doesn't hold up. No.
Do you know what?
From my viewing, did not hold up.
Didn't want to mention too much about the 3D yet, but it looked good in 3D.
I can see it looking good in 3D.
Maybe, although, you know when you watch a 3D movie?
Yeah.
And... at the start, everything looks incredible, and then you eventually get used to it, and nothing looks 3D anymore.
And you start getting that little migraine tickle. Yeah, and
everything just looks flat again. Maybe that's why it looked insanely 3D.
It's a great scene for the exposition, but I think it's you can tell because you got a lot of vehicles and large things, you know, moving around.
Mm.
And I felt from my viewing on Blu-ray. You can tell
on Blu-ray.
You think a theatre with 3D would look pretty good?
It looked pretty good.
It looked good, like, but you can tell, and we forgive it obviously because it's an amazing movie made in a period where that's the special effects that we had.
I'll counter that with on something that doesn't actually look good, but similar though, where they built sets, so sort of like the same sort of thing with the nuclear explosion.
Yep,
the dream sequences that Sarah Connor has.
You can't see this one pointing to my list at something, showing my excitement.
Yep. The buildings are getting ripped away, and now I like it when they build, you know, filmmakers build little sets and models and stuff. Looked really good in Star Wars, you know, stuff like that. This looked good, but it's not on par with the other effects in this film.
No, it definitely isn't. But what I will say in that regard, I love that scene, but I've totally forgot. That it was very, very similar to the kind of things that we saw with Independence Day, with the miniature buildings, and they were really, truly blowing them away. And
they're like very shallow on detail because they were just sort of like...
They're just miniatures of cutouts of an LA set, I think it was, LA, maybe. But I truly, that was mind-blowing to me just to go back there and realize, hang on, that's right, it's the effects of the time. But
that's it, yep.
It was... done really well with some really amazing detail.
I mean, it still looks pretty good, but if you want to be critical,
do you know what?
It doesn't hold up 25 years later.
It doesn't hold up, but do you know what is pretty amazing? The impact of that bomb blast with her against the fence. That's actually been from the very first time I saw this movie, one of the most impactful scenes.
That or like and with the playground.
With the playground,
yeah, so, where she gets burnt away,
and it's the same thing. The bomb goes off and blows up LA, and she's shaking the fence. And everybody turns to paper mache.
Oh, I'm on two parts with that scene.
Okay.
So when the playground's actually getting torn away, that looks really cool and dark and scary.
Yeah.
When when the puppet of Linda Hamilton is sort of getting crisp away, not so good.
I get that. But I do remember.
Like, I love animatronics, but
I've got a soft spot for that particular scene because just because of my original interpretation when I was a kid watching that, hit me hard
of just how scary.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But from a special effects point of view, absolutely. I understand what you're saying. I think one of the best ones that we have, and the I've got a standout. Oh no, I'm not going to do my standout yet. A couple others.
I'm probably going to say it and ruin it.
The asylum, when they're in the asylum, as the T-1000 walks through the bars.
Of course. Yes. I mean,
amazing.
Is probably the example they go to for the CGI used in this movie is of course it's just the liquid blob man going through
the finger stab. You know the finger stab?
Oh.
All CG, but he reacts to it. He gets him right in
this
head.
Podcast, it's just us grunting and excitement. Oh.
You don't understand, I'm pointing right now at Chase.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of slowly moving away. If he gets a bit quieter on the mic, that's it's my fault. But we'll continue going. The milk carton stab, good one of mine.
Like you said, scary. Haunted your dreams.
Great sound editing as well. You know, you've got this guy talking, who actually turns out to be the bad guy from Air Force One, that movie with Harrison Ford. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Maybe we'll do that one day.
Yeah, we'll do that one. Put that on the list. The arrival scenes, the energy ball that comes out.
Time travel.
That looks pretty cool. But what's the actual aftermath of the time travel ball with all the molten metal and concrete?
Yeah, like when it's on the corner of the truck and it's just so spherical.
Perfect. If some set dresser had a ball doing that.
Like, I'm sure they just with a machine, just cut like a round thing, which is easy enough to do.
But then
obviously they've attached like the glowing effect, and it's like just all together, every bit of detail just works
When you walk around to when the cop walks around and sees where the T-1000 entered, and you see the flame, not flaming, but the smoldering chicken wire, fence wire.
Yeah,
it's just so well done. It's all really, really well done. What else we got? The skull surgery in the mirror. Oh my god. I have a new appreciation for smoke and mirrors in film.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
When
they're taking his chip out.
Yeah, just after they escape the asylum and they sort of fire for a bit.
Yeah, so they peel off his skin and you see Arnold Schwarzenegger looking in a mirror acting in real time to Linda Hamilton doing surgery on his skull. But it's all smoke and mirrors. That is a prosthetic head that she's working on, and he is acting somewhere else. I don't know where.
And somewhere else, and they put his face onto it.
No, as in he's in the shot, but he might be to the side, and the mirror is picking him up. It's there was a behind the scenes feature when I was a kid, but I didn't realize how good it looks until now.
Well, that's because that scene sort of, I want to say mirrors, but I guess it sort of draws back from the first film when the T-800 does it himself in the mirror, and he has to poke his eye or something.
Oh, yeah.
And that is literally a puppet head of Arnie's face.
Yeah, right.
And it looks terrible. Like, it's the worst.
I barely remember.
If you watch the first, like, that's one of the worst practical effects. But, well, I mean, but it was only 1984. So
yeah.
But, man, it was shocking.
Okay, a couple of other notes. Give us a couple. What else you got?
The truck and bike chase.
Yes!
Was that your standout?
It's my standout scene. Yes. Amazing.
Now this is just like practical effects. You've got I think they filmed it. They've got trucks flipping over, and then they've got the stuntman surfing on the truck, like standing on it. And then you've got
that scene where it launches into the storm drain. Amazing! You don't expect it. It's just like he's looking behind him. It's silence, and all of a sudden, this real truck launches itself over the edge.
What's also good, obviously, when they're driving on the bikes and stuff, they're not really actually in there with the truck. They're using rear projection. So that's when they're filming.
Wow.
As opposed to a green screen, which is pretty much is used all the time now.
Yeah.
You got rear projection where they're filming them on the bike or whatever.
Yeah.
But in the background, they've got this giant screen. So like a cinema screen or like an IMAX screen or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's playing footage.
Of the truck.
Of like the truck or like the angles of, you know, like driving down that big drain pipe thing.
Really?
Yeah, so they're...
Wow, I'm having my mind blown. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite scenes. There's a few other examples when they do it. I think like when there's a when the Cyber Dome building blows up, there's a helicopter that's spinning around. Yeah. Again, they're using rear projection. So they've got this, they've got the helicopter prop on a stage and they're turning it.
Yeah.
And then you've got the footage of sort of the sky sort of spinning around and they put that together. And that's incredible. It works better than...
And it still stands.
I mean, it's flawless.
It's amazing.
Seamless.
It's amazing. Well, you got my favourites, my standout scene, special effect wise. What did you mention?
The Cyberdyne building exploding. They actually blew up a building.
Oh, really?
They blew it up to hell. They went
Christopher Nolan on it.
A lot of the T-1000, not just the CGI elements where he's all liquid, but you know, like when he gets cut or when he gets shot and you get like that weird, like elongated, like silver liquid sort of flop and stuff. A lot of that's a combination of puppet switch outs, which is a testament to Stan Winston and all that crew. They also did a lot of
RIP, by the way.
Cyber scans, so sort of like motion, like an early version of like motion capture. Mm. And they made like combine that with like clay models of faces.
Yeah.
All these little elements put together create a lot of those scenes.
Yeah.
So the big one for me is what they referred to as the Pretzel Man. So that's just before the T-1000 meets his demise.
Yep.
And he's literally like he's still in one piece, but his head's over there, his arm's over there. Yep. I'm pointing all over the room if everyone's wondering. Yep. he's literally just split in two.
It's when the T-800 shoots him with a grenade.
So
Jason showed me a video today about this, and it's on YouTube. Truly amazing to see the engineering that goes into that.
A combination of all these different effects, but mainly a switch out of, again, like a puppet. Like they built that sort of contraptment of a being,
and it really
flops and
explodes.
And then they blow it up, which is cool.
Really amazing. Quick notable mention as well, because we've got to keep on moving. But Arnie's crushed arm. And face as he's getting his head smashed by the T-1000.
Yeah, the physical fight there is good.
And the arm being crushed in the wheel. It looks real.
Good. I'm looking at that scene and I'm just like, where's his arm gone? Yeah. For real. Is it?
I don't know.
Movie magic.
That's where we're going to leave it on that one. Because it is truly movie magic. This movie is, it's undeniable. This is a amazing piece of artistry in regards to special effects.
This one scene I want to point out. Again, not a special effects scene, but and yes, it does involve a bit of Arnie ass. So the bad to the bone.
Did you say Arnie ass?
Yeah, I said Arnie ass. Okay, and now I've said it twice.
Sorry.
So obviously, when Arnie does first rock up, and he's walking into that biker bar, he's butt naked. Everyone's looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
Bad to the Bones playing. So that's that song by George Thorogood and the Destroyers.
Correct.
It's just that whole introduction. It's just laying out, just setting this film up for what we're in store for.
It is so corny,
and
though.
Fun fact on this, Arnie's actually in there. He's not naked. He's wearing the brightest purple Hawaiian-style pants, like shorts, for some reason. Because obviously he doesn't want to be naked on set.
Right.
So all the actors in that bar are looking at him, trying not to piss themselves laughing
at this
bulking man wearing these bright purple Hawaiian pants.
Well, my gosh.
All of those actors in there, like, thumbs up to them.
I need to...
Thumbs up.
Wow. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So that's a butt double.
It's
not him.
Maybe it's a CGI butt.
CGI butt
maybe,
from back then.
Maybe a butt double.
It's just too real, man.
Maybe that's part of the 5 minutes of CGI.
I don't know. Guys, you go out there and have a look and let us know if you...
tell us what you know about Arnie's butt.
Yeah. Let us know if you think it's the real deal, because...
Does it look real to you? Like, zoom in, get the Blu-ray. Go watch it in 3D.
Yeah.
See if those dimensions look real to... I have to stop.
Well, I've actually already covered mine as well. Mine was the bomb blast scene that you... the dream sequence scene where you see LA. I think it's LA. Get destroyed, and then you see the playground. But it's like I said, when I watched this movie when I was a kid, it was hugely impactful. Hugely, it for me, because I was about the same age as one of the kids in the playground, and it was so strange to watch someone silently scream at these kids. You know, say, "Save yourself, and can't do anything about it. And that kind of sums up the whole film in a way from Linda Hamilton's perspective, is she's helpless. And in the asylum, she's helpless. She can't do anything about it. And nobody can. The whole world cannot do anything about it. It's slowly ticking towards that day. And away you go. So, great scene. Favourite scene. Really, really enjoyed it. Another notable mention also is just the humour, the subtle humour in all the scenes when Arnie's got his dialogue. Things like, he'll live, or they'll live. And it's just the perfect way to finish.
I'm not killing things.
But it's just the perfect way to finish those action pieces that he's in with just a tiny little bit of light humour. Just like when he's going into the molten metal and he gives the thumbs up. It's just like a cheeky little way of finishing off something serious.
How emotional is that scene? Yeah, it is. He says goodbye to his little friend and then he's like, I'm going to go die now. See you later.
Got
to
do this properly.
But it's all good. Yeah, thumbs up. It's all good.
That's right.
All right. I just want to ask you, how do you reckon... Obviously, I think it's pretty clear that we're both big fans. we really like this movie. How does this compare to the other Terminator movies for you? I want you to, just off the top of your head, just rank them for me.
I've been dreading.
You've got five of them before you forget any.
Plus more coming. Look, there's no denying, like from my point of view, this is the standout of the entire franchise.
Yep.
Even with the newer iterations with Genesis and Salvation. So they've got the special effects behind them.
Mm.
Probably more Salvation than Genesis, to be honest. But none of them have got the storytelling. I think from the second movie, they had a chance to really, really tell a solid story, and they haven't captured it the same way. The first one, I haven't seen that for a good 20 years, I'd say.
Yeah.
So I can't really tell you.
You're butchering my question then.
But no, I would say this is the best.
I'll give you my ranking, and I'll just see if you agree with it. We'll do that.
Are you gonna give your rank right now?
No. Well, my ranking of the franchise so far. So T2 at the top, T1 following in second place.
Okay.
Do you know what? Terminator Genesis, I'm gonna put in third place because I actually enjoyed it. I'll revisit it and maybe I'll bring it down. But compared to the other last two remaining films, Genesis was fun. It felt like a Terminator movie. Time travel, all that kind of stuff. Right. Terminator Salvation, although it didn't really feel like a Terminator movie, was pretty good. You know, good effects, all that kind of stuff. Sam Worthington's in it. Yeah, he's all right.
Okay.
And T3, I can't even finish it anymore. I get halfway through and I turn it off.
This is Nick Stoll, isn't he?
No.
Anyway, well, seeing as you've been so analytical for it, I'll quickly give it to you. I haven't written this down, but I would say T2 equals number one.
Yep.
I would say, look, I actually really enjoyed Salvation.
Okay, so second place.
I'd throw Salvation second place. I'm going to, because I can't remember, but I do remember enjoying the first one.
Yep.
I'm going to throw that at number three. Then comes Genesis, and then number three.
So agree, we just don't talk
about
that.
Let's just say that that's number eight.
That's it.
And the next three movies will probably go in between that as well.
All right. So that pretty much gives us a summary, I guess, of where we feel about how we feel about T2. But let's give an official rating out of five. And then what we're going to do for this show is out of five VHS tapes.
Absolutely. Because you are the veteran podcaster, you can go first.
Damn. All right. And I think we've already said it all. This movie is an example of a sequel, you know, trumping the first on pretty much every level, technically, story-wise, performances, you name it. For a movie that's about 25 years old or more, for the most part, it has pretty much held up.
Yeah,
not a perfect film. You know, like, things have dated and all that. But the characters, the villain protagonist flip with the T-800, everything there, like, this is a masterpiece of a film. Potentially, maybe, to me, James Cameron's best movie. I mean, can I make that statement?
Big call.
I'm going to... You know what? It's August, and this is the best movie I've seen in a cinema this year, and it came out 25 years ago. It is my first 5 out of 5 for this year. It is, I mean,
wow,
mate, it's better than a 4. It's a 5. Like, it's one of those movies. Let me just say, we continue to do these reviews, they're not all going to be fives.
Of course
they're not all doing it. We just happen to have landed on one that is an incredible piece of film. Historically and just fun. Good entertainment blockbuster fun
and
as well.
So it is, it's obvious that Jason's smitten with it. I have an equal amount of praise for it. I am... This has got a huge... currently sitting with one. No, this has got a huge amount of nostalgic value to me. I grew up with this movie. I was a little tacker when I saw it, and there's a few scenes in it that really have stuck with me. Even now, watching as an adult, they still have the same kind of impact. I can see that the visual effects, some of them have dated, but that's how things progress. The really amazing thing about it is a lot of it hasn't. A lot of it really stands up. And, you know, it's really hard to find some movies even made in the last 10 years that stand up to now. We're not going to see a 100% polished, you know. It is what it is. It's made in the 90s. But this is an amazing movie and an amazing sequel. I cannot think for the life of me of a better sequel with a better storytelling, better characters. The character splits, the character switches, like you were saying.
Yeah, and the characters literally split.
Literally split in half. But it's probably one of my favorite movies of all time. So we've chosen a good one to do it. I'm going to say a 4.5.
I have you on the edge of my seat there. So I was like, well, he's giving me a 5. What's he talking about?
The 0.5, it's probably just Edward Furlong. Sorry, buddy. Sorry, mate. No, not at all. No, it's not a perfect film, as you said. It does have its faults, but my gosh, I could keep on watching it, and I'm probably not going to stop. So 4.5 out of 5 VHS tapes.
Perfect.
Jason.
So, that was our rewind to 1991. James Cameron's Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Don't forget that the 3D re-release is out in cinemas for just 1 week only on August 24th. And thanks again to Anarchy PR for letting me tag along to that.
Mm-hmm. We hope you enjoyed our first episode of Rewind and Review. We're both looking forward to bringing you more of them. If you hated every minute, please share your experience with us. thatfilmstewpodcast@gmail.com. Attention, Luke.
Yes, send all your complaints to him.
And if you have any praise or positive feedback, please make sure you attention it to Jason or Rob. Now, if you're wondering, we do have another episode planned. Our next Rewind and Review will be Blade Runner in honor of the upcoming release of Blade Runner 2049.
So keep a lookout for that. It won't be far away. But also, I just want to mention, if you were wondering, that Film Stew will be back from their hiatus very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Luke and I have got a review of the latest DC animated film, Batman and Harley Quinn, brewing. Luke and his partner have had their second baby.
Yay.
So we want to, both of us just want to officially give him a podcast congratulations. I'm sure Luke will be listening. Even with his recent lack of sleep, sure.
The poor bloke. No, congratulations, Luke. It'll be good to hear you again once you're ready to rock and roll. This has been Rewind and Review with me, Rob.
And I've been Jason. See you on our next trip.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Please rewind this cassette before returning it to your video library.
What did Phil Tippett do?
He was responsible for all the dinosaurs.
That'll be one of my quiz questions.